morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Funganyi in Washington. Today is Thursday, December the 30th, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you this morning. The World Health Organization warns the rapid dual circulation of the Omicron and Delta variants is leading to a tsunami of cases, severe disease, and surging death among the unvaccinated.
Narrow nationalism and hoarding of health tools by a small number of countries undermined equity and created the ideal conditions for the emergence of new variants.
That is the WHO Director General, Dr. Tedros Adhanom. In Tanzania, health authorities are advocating for a public awareness campaign to educate women on how to cope with breast cancer. A fight broke out in Kenya's parliament as legislators were debating on an amendment bill to change the law on political parties.
Mr. Speaker, I've been attacked in this house by the master of violence in this house, Mr. Speaker.
Those stories plus what is being called the start of a Me Too movement in Morocco, coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. Stay tuned. And for our top story, the World Health Organization warns the rapid dual circulation of the Omicron and Delta variants of the coronavirus is leading to a tsunami of cases, severe disease, and surging death among the unvaccinated. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says while science had led to the development of COVID-19 vaccines, the global death toll from the disease keeps rising. In 2020, the World Health Organization reported 1.8 million deaths globally, a number that pales in comparison to the additional 3.5 million deaths reported in 2021. Tedros says the reason for the climb is that politics too often trumps the need to work together to defeat this pandemic.
Populism, narrow nationalism, and hoarding of health tools, including masks, therapeutics, diagnostics, and vaccines, by a small number of countries undermined equity and created the ideal conditions for the emergence of new variants.
Tedros condemns the misinformation and disinformation that often is spread by a small number of people for undermining science and trust in life-saving health tools. He says these twin evils are driving vaccine hesitancy and are to blame for the disproportionately large number of unvaccinated people dying from the Delta and Omicron strains of the coronavirus. He warns the virus that causes COVID-19 will continue to evolve and threaten the health system if nations do not improve their collective response. He says it is time to rise above short-term nationalism and protect populations and economies against future variants by addressing global vaccine inequity.
Ending health inequity remains the key to ending the pandemic. As this pandemic drags on, it's possible that new variants could evade our countermeasures and become fully resistant to current vaccines or past infection, necessitating vaccine adaptations.
The WHO chief says it is time to banish the politics of populism, and self-interests are derailing the global response to the pandemic. As 2021 reaches its end, Tedros is asking everyone to make a New Year's resolution to get behind WHO's campaign to vaccinate 70% of the world's population by the middle of 2022. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A fight broke out in Kenya's parliament as legislators were debating on an amendment bill to change the law on political parties. Kenya's National Assembly minority leader John Mbadi was suspended after injuring his colleague Bernard Koros. As Maureen Ojambo reports from Nairobi, Kenya, members of parliament had been recalled from holidays to convene a special sitting to vote on the controversial amendments largely opposed by legislators allied to Deputy President William Ruto.
The Honorable KJ, you are out of order, get out. The Honorable Sankok, get out.
That was the situation in Kenya's Parliament Day Wednesday for almost an hour as heated exchanges characterized the afternoon sitting as members showed up to support or oppose the amendments.
Order, members.
The lawmakers forced their way to Speaker's section and began exchanging blows, with some members of Parliament throwing water bottles at their colleagues during the fight. Bernard Koros, Member of Parliament who was attacked and injured by minority leader in Kenya's Parliament, defended his right to vote and that the attack was a violation of House rules.
Mr. Speaker, I've been attacked in this house by the master of violence in this house, Mr. Speaker. Now I can see, I can vote. I have a right to vote in this house, Mr. Speaker. We cannot accept to be injured in a national house like this, Mr. Speaker.
The chaos erupted when the members of parliament were taking a vote on a proposed amendment by Kandara Member of Parliament Alice Wahome that sought to delete a clause on the establishment of a coalition party. Wahome argued that the added clause 6 was unconstitutional and should be removed. Temporary Speaker Chris Omulele had a difficult time to bring order in the House. He was forced to adjourn the session as he suspended the minority leader John Mbadi from Parliament for 5 days for gross misconduct.
The Honourable Mbadi, you are hereby directed to leave the presence of this House. That the Honourable Sankok was throwing bottles across the floor.
Members of Parliament were recalled by Speaker Justin Muturi to vote on the controversial amendments, largely opposed by Deputy President William Ruto and legislatures loyal to him, who see it as a boast for former Prime Minister Raila Odinga, who intends to vie for presidency on Azimio la Umoja ticket in 2022 general election. Member allied to Odinga, Millie Odhiambo, insists that the bill has to pass.
We are going to sit here until midnight. Even if you are going to do 5, we'll do it, and we'll urge the leader of majority to call another special sitting. You want to miss your holiday? We are game. We are going to be here with you for the long haul.
The legislatures had proposed amendments to enable the creation of a political parties registration board, which will have a chief executive board, by insertion of a new clause in Section 19A of the Kenyan Constitution. The bill is currently facing hurdles in Parliament. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Voice of America.
In the last 4 years, the struggle for gender equality has gained momentum, generating global attention on and offline. In Africa, young activists are primarily using social media to create awareness while building social movements like the Me Too movement around an issue that has long been ignored in mainly traditional societies. In Morocco, a recent incident between a female student and a professor at the National School of Business and Management, located in the northeastern city of Abuja, has renewed calls for more action on issues around sexual abuse and violence. Hannah Bezad is a tech entrepreneur, social activist, and author from Morocco. She explains to me that the recent scandal sparked protest in the school, with students coming together to break their silence and vow to fight against the sexual abuse culture that has been on the rise in Moroccan higher institutions of learning.
So there was a scandal that happened at the Moroccan National School of Business and Management in Oujda, in the north of Morocco, that provoked outrage among students and activists. Basically, I read this article this morning on social media about a student being harassed, sexually harassed by a professor. And I read it on the social media of the Moroccan Outlaws, which is this collective that started in 2019 to promote a change in mentalities and civil rights. And I reached out to Sonia Tarab, who's the founder of this collective, and who explained that she had received herself the messages from students to ask her for help and support after one victim reported the case of being harassed to the school administration. She did so through an official letter after she had decided to leave the school with ample proof of the mischief. She had taken snapshots of unsolicited conversations with requests for sexual favors from this professor, sexual explicit comments, And it seems like the professor repeatedly asked for sexual favors in return for validating the student's semester. Okay. He blackmailed her. He threatened to ruin her academic year if she didn't agree to give him an oral sex session. And he also mocked her vulnerability and mentioned that the administration was on his side.
Right. And how are these issues often addressed in the legal system in Morocco? Are there any protections for women who are targeted by sexual predators?
I would say that to this day, and despite the massive strides that civil movements are making, such as Moroccan Outlaws, against all odds, because they have no support, Moroccan Outlaws, for that matter, did not even receive a nonprofit status for 2 years, despite them having asked for it for 2 years. So sexual predation is weakly addressed. You have legal loopholes like the disqualification of irrefutable evidence obtained illegally, such as voice notes on WhatsApp, for instance, and insufficient implementation of the existing laws that are already kind of weak. You do have an article in the Moroccan penal code that says that basically abusing your authority to harass other people by threats, coercion, and other means is sexual harassment, and it's subject to prison sentence from 1 to 2 years and a fine of about $500 to $5,000.
Is that something that is...
It's not enforced. It's not enforced because it's very hard. First of all, it's very hard for victims to speak up. And then when they do, their proof is not taken into account because most of the time, those proofs have to be obtained illegally. Of course, you're not going to ask your harasser to confirm that you can use the snapshots of this conversation, right? So to this day, it's very far from the much-needed adequate response to what is a rampant culture of undeterred toxic masculinity.
Now, over the last couple of years, at least 3 or 4 years, we've talked about the Me Too movement on the continent, especially in Morocco. You yourself, when we had you, we talked about the petition that you signed 2 years ago. Is this the moment, is this the Me Too movement in Morocco that has been waiting for?
So many movements have been called the Moroccan Me Too. Masaktesh in 2018 started a movement to condemn the culture of rape and impunity. To this day, nobody knows exactly how prevalent the sexual demands are in Moroccan universities, for instance. The victims fail to report the harassment. And it's true that this movement, Masaktesh, for instance, gained momentum, and Moroccan Outlaws is again doing immense work. But I can't really say, I'm hoping for it to be the day it is the Me Too of Morocco.
And the results of the Me Too movement in Morocco would mean the law enforcement authorities will actually start enforcing laws that they already have on the books against sexual predators.
We need to put pressure on them. We need to continue pressuring them. For now, like I said, Morocco Now Laws is a magnificent social movement in favor of individual liberties. Since its creation, the initiative made a lot of noise. It collected more than 15,000 signatures. And through it, it contributed largely to the royal pardon of the journalist Hajar Raisouni, if you remember.
Yes, I remember.
Her doctor and her fiancé were in prison for abortion and sexual relationship outside of marriage. So it's great what the outlaws are doing. This movement is focused on the rights of youth, women, LGBT community, has a strong presence on social media. It provokes debates and challenges long-held taboos and stigma through raising awareness on gender and sexual issues. Now, while I do hope that this social media movement will expand, and I would like to see more platforms of in real life conversations to break the taboos around sexual predation and really make sure that the decision makers are serious about it. I do hope that administrations of schools and campuses get a clear signal that they are responsible for the well-being and safety of their female students, and they need to do something. For now, their position is that we can't do anything, and the justice is the same, or we can't take your proof. So I do hope that the victims get justice and perpetrators get sanctioned, and I do hope that throughout this process, reparation is sought in ways that are restorative and healing for all those that suffer from sexual predation, and there are many.
That was Hannah Bezad, a tech entrepreneur, social activist, and author from Morocco. In Tanzania, health authorities are advocating for a public awareness campaign to educate women on how to cope with breast cancer. They say women need to learn many things, including how to determine if they have the disease and how to deal with medical costs and social stigma. Our correspondent Eid Uwesu has more from Dar es Salaam.
Breast cancer survivor Kuruthum Kionzi says that for her, one of the most difficult parts of breast cancer treatment was the cost. She says she had to sell family property to pay for hospital bills. She tells me that during the treatment, she had to pay $110 every week for her prescribed medication. Sometimes she had to go to private hospital for tests where she paid cash. So in a week, she used about $300. It was a burden for her family. They had to sell their cars and a family plot to cover medical expenses. Kuruthum argues the government to increase its efforts to help cancer patients. Although the state does provide a small amount of financial support to patients, she says the system needs to be strengthened. She says the government has to do more on helping cancer patients with needed medicines such as chemo and other services. She compares her plight with the support given to HIV patients who are given access to antiretroviral medications for free. Irene Mpangile is the head of program at the Tanzania Breast Cancer Fund. She supports community awareness about cancer and calls women patients heroes, for whom she helps provide artificial breasts. Irene says stigma is another challenge that increased the burden on those with the illness. She tells me that, for example, many women's families tell her she's not a complete woman if she required to have a breast removed. She says it's a challenge for women to cope with this type of social stigma. Johnson Katanga is a doctor in the immunization unit at Ocean Road Cancer Institute in Dar es Salaam. He says awareness is still low among many citizens, and that has been one of the reasons most cancer patients suffer with cost and other issues. Dr. Katanga tells me that the cost for some medicines, like chemo, can be shared jointly between the government and patients, who are required to contribute for x-rays or blood testing. The goal is to allow all patients, especially those without money, to receive treatment. But he says most patients are not aware of the financial support. As a result, they tend to wait to go to hospital in the fatal and final stage of the disease. Breast cancer is said to be a second leading cause of death in women after cervical cancer here in Tanzania. That's why medical experts say women should develop habits for improving their care, including learning how to examine themselves for breast cancer and going regularly to health facilities for checkups. That way, they say women can be diagnosed and treated early while there is still a chance for successful outcome. Reporting for Daybreak Africa, I am Eid Uwesu in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. Voice of
America. Gambia's Supreme Court dismissed the legal challenge to President Adama Barrow's recent election victory, ruling that the petition had not followed proper procedure. Sadio Brito has more from Banjul.
The opposition United Democratic Party has lost its bid to annul the results of the December 4 polls. The country's biggest opposition party and runner-up in the recently concluded presidential election petitioned the country's top court, asking that the court nullify the results of the election, citing allegations of bribery and corruption during the campaign period and irregularities raised by their party agents and representatives at polling stations on election day. Supreme Court justices led by Justice Hassan B. Jallo dismissed the petition on the grounds that the United Democratic Party failed to comply with the requirement of Rule 11 of the election petition rules, which required that a petitioner file a motion of petition and security. The Supreme Court also ordered the United Democratic Party to pay an amount of 200,000 dollars, an equivalent of $1,904, to President-elect Adama Barrow. Reacting to the Supreme Court's ruling, the deputy spokesperson of President Barrow's National People's Party, Sidin Jai, told reporters that the landmark case is a win for democracy.
We are happy and we want to call out on all Gambians that let us, the Gambia under President Adama Barrow, we will continue to build credible and independent judiciary where people can resort to and they can be assured, either for or against government, that the principles of democracy, the principles of due process, and the principles of rule of law will be applied.
In a Facebook message widely circulated by his supporters, the leader of the United Democratic Party, Usainu Dabo, reacting to the Supreme Court's ruling, wrote, "We have not lost anything because the petition was not dismissed based on merit, but a mere technicality," Dabo said. "We should be proud of ourselves for what we have done and will continue to do for country." While it isn't clear if Usainu Dabo will continue to challenge the results of the election, Supreme Court decisions are final and cannot be appealed. Sajid Brito, VOA Daybreak Africa, Banjul.
A military tribunal in Cameroon this week sentenced 47 opposition party members to between 1 and 7 years in jail for rebellion and attempted insurrection. Police arrested the Cameroon Renaissance Movement, or MRC, supporters in September 2020 while they were planning protests against the 40-year rule of President Paul Biya. Moki Edward Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
More than 20 supporters of the opposition Cameroon Renaissance Movement, MRC, on Wednesday morning stood in front of MRC leader Maurice Kamto's house. They told a reporter they are waiting to hear from Kamto after a Yaoundé military tribunal this week sentenced 47 of his supporters to up to 7 years in jail. The tribunal on Monday and Tuesday sentenced the 47 opposition party members to between 1 and 7 years in jail for attempted insurrection. The MRC party's spokesperson, treasurer, coordinator, and president of the women's wing were among those given 7-year terms. 41-year-old bestseller Emmanuel Kwenye was among those condemning the prison terms.
Si les gens ont marché pour exprimer leur mécontentement, c'est pas normal qu'on les arrête et on les met.
He says it is very wrong and abnormal for authorities who claim they are democratic to order the arrest and sentencing of people who simply expressed their democratic opinions. Kwanye says they are expecting Maurice Kamto, head of the MRC party, to give directives on what should be done to press for the release of the jailed opposition supporters. Cameroonian police arrested the opposition members in September 2020 while they were planning protests against President Paul Biya's long stay in power. Biya has ruled Cameroon for 4 decades, making him Africa's second longest ruling leader. Kamto claims he won the October 2018 presidential election in Cameroon and that Biya stole his victory. More than 500 civilians who protested the crackdown also were arrested. In January 2019, authorities detained Kamto and several hundred of his supporters for insisting that Biya stole the 2018 presidential election. International pressure led Biya to pardon Kamto, but only after he had spent 9 months in prison. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
And that's it for this Thursday, December the 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. We want to thank you for spending this morning with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very